because of foreign wars we wage. More to do with the colors blue and red. Too many laws, too much government. Can you tell me where the Constitution went? The Bill of Rights is just hanging by a thread. So many people trying to cross the border. Politicians build a new world order. Too many minds are convinced they should be led. I've gotta be free the way God made men. And I won't be ruled by the dance. Right to self-defense. They say you're stable, but they don't make sense. Dangerous ones will not turn into guns. All the food you know is asking for. All we buy is made on foreign shores. Come a day when there'll be real hell to pay. I've gotta be free the way God made men. And I won't
Truth. Hope you're having a fantastic day, wherever you are and whatever you may be doing, with all the usual caveats, of course. With you as always, I'm your ever so humble host, Tim Tapp, coming to you live from historic Roane County, Tennessee. That is, of course, if you're listening to the live broadcast. If you are not, but you are so inclined as to listen to one of the rebroadcasts that can be found in great radio stations across the country, like KYAH 540 AM, Utah's Talk Authority, or WXEI 95.3 FM, the Talk of Crestview in Crestview, Florida, WCET 101.7 FM, Columbia Talk in beautiful Columbia, South Carolina, or KDIL 105.7 FM, Kennewick, Washington. Whether you're in one of those locations or if you're listening in podcast form after the fact, wherever you listen to podcasts, well, regardless, welcome to the show just the same. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. Hope you'll stay with us for the entire broadcast. But for your benefit, just so you know, just in case something sounds a little dated by the time you hear it, the time of the live broadcast is August 27th, 2019. It's just a few brief moments after 8 p.m. Eastern time. So, you know, take that into account when the time is appropriate. So, this is, of course, the one-hour broadcast. It is intended primarily as that bridge to make sure there's enough content through the week. And one of the things that we often do here is I will babble on for about 30 minutes, and then in about 30 minutes, I am normally joined by a singular guest. That's the way we normally play that game here on the most awesome of Tuesday night live broadcasts. Today, Veda Sitaram will be joining us. He is, of course, a Canadian. He is a filmmaker. He is working on a documentary that is designed specifically to take a look at family courts, both in the United States and in Canada, with the idea being taking a look seriously at how the deck is stacked against men, particularly fathers in these family courts, aka divorce courts. He's taking a in-depth look. He's working on the documentary, and he has started a Kickstarter campaign, which there are links to all of that in today's show description right here. So I would highly recommend you guys come check it out. The title of this brand new documentary that he is working on is Man Down, A Closer Look at Family Court. And the idea is to get some genuine testimony and hopefully to answer the question of whether or not it just seems like whether or not the deck is stacked against men, or if it is, why it is, and what can be done to fix it. Because after all, stacking the deck is not a good way to achieve balance or justice. And the family court is supposed to be looking out at what's best for the family. And primarily, when divorces get nasty, it's when kids are involved. And that is the part that makes it even worse. So we'll have that discussion then. Hope you guys will enjoy the conversation. I'm looking forward to it. Meanwhile, taking a peek in the chat room, I see Chief has joined us. Caviar. Are we having the usual caviar? Who brought the crackers? Did I say caviar earlier? The usual caveats is what I was trying to say. Did I do that? Now, Chief's got me wondering now. As many times as I've said that as an intro, you would think I would have no problems with it. Anyway, thanks for being here, Chief. Appreciate it. Hang with us, and we'll get where we are going here momentarily. Little bit of interesting news, really kind of making some waves for those of you who are full-fledged. Okay, maybe I am having trouble talking tonight. Full-fledged admirers of the squad. Everyone's favorite Minnesotan member of the squad, Representative Ilhan Omar. She's riding the wave of not so positive vibes, as she has now officially been accused of having an affair with a married man, whom she allegedly, see, I'm doing my journalistic standards higher than folks that consider themselves journalists, whom she is allegedly funneled large sums of money to via her campaign. All of this was offered up in divorce documents that were filed this week. Dr. Beth Jordan Manette says that her cheating spouse, Tim Manette, told her in April that he was having an affair with the Somali-born U.S. representative, and that he even made a, quote, shocking declaration of love for the Minnesota congresswoman before he ditched her. All this in the filing that was submitted in D.C. Superior Court on Tuesday, August the 27th. That'd be today, at the time of the live broadcast. It was reported by the New York Post, by the way. Court documents reviewed by the Post said that Tim Manette, 38 years of age, and Jordan Manette, 55, physically separated on or about April 7th of 2019, when the defendant told the plaintiff that he was romantically involved with and in love with another woman, Ilhan Omar. Damn, this guy's got some killer taste, doesn't he? Anyway, the Post added, quote, the 37-year-old congresswoman and mom of three paid Tim Manette and his E Street Group approximately $230,000 through her campaign since 2018 for fundraising consulting, digital communications, internet advertising, and travel expenses. $230,000. You know, whenever I see stuff like this, and I see these folks getting away with it for the most part, because, you know, for every single individual time we hear about something like this, there's literally dozens, if not tens of dozens of occasions where nobody even raises an eyebrow and nobody talks about it, which makes me realize that I am definitely in the wrong line of work. How on earth can somebody legitimately claim $230,000 only for about a year here, since 2018, for fundraising consulting, digital communications, internet advertising, and travel expenses. So you're paying me to travel around for the purpose of providing you fundraising consulting, digital communication, internet. Okay, first of all, why do I have to travel at all to do those things? Sounds like a great way to just write off a vacation. Now, you know, folks have been getting away with that for a long time, but, you know, I don't know what this guy does. These just seem like some odd lines in the odd baselines in the budget. This is the excuse for this amount. This is the excuse for that amount. Seriously, I could do the same job that he's talking about and probably be profitable at $2,000. Anyway, investigative reporter Jordan Sanchel, at least I believe that's the proper pronunciation there, and Luke Oruska both weighed in on the financial disclosures that were made in the report. So the Post really did add and get some contributions here. This is not something that they just ran with without doing some due diligence. So, again, journalistic standards. It's nice to see some being practiced. So the investigative reporters, they weighed in on the financial disclosures that were made in the report. And according to Jordan, he just sarcastically tweeted, "Oh, okay, no corruption there." And, of course, Rosowski tweeted, "Representative Duncan Hunter, Republican California, is being criminally prosecuted and facing prison for using campaign funds to fund extramarital affairs. What will the Minnesota U.S. attorney do?" Excellent question. I'm guessing since it's Ilhan Omar, probably nothing that we don't make him. And by we, I mean the people. And in this case, it had better be the people of Minnesota. Come on, people of Minnesota. It's bad enough you sent her to D.C. when she doesn't even like this country. It's bad enough that you knew who she was when you elected her for the state legislature and then sent her to the U.S. legislature. It's bad enough still that you've seen her embarrass you on the national stage time and time again. It's bad enough that you've looked the other way and not already taken as me to try and remove her from office. I know she's only in office for 2 years. I know she has to run for re-election. I know it'd be expensive. But the level of anti-Semitism from this woman is difficult for even most Democrats to stomach. And when I say that, I don't really mean to be that disrespectful to Democrats. I know it sounds that way. But all I mean is that, typically speaking, the pattern of the past has been, as soon as something that even appears to be impropriety for someone that claims an R at the end of their name pops up, the Republicans cut ties. Boom. You're done, son. Hang it up. If you can clear your name, maybe we'll let you back in the club later. But in the meanwhile, we're not risking it. Whereas on the side of the aisle where the D's come at the end of their name, no matter what the allegation is, generally speaking, except for that brief little moment in time when the Me Too movement was able to take down Al Franken, outside of that, typically they just circle the wagons, and it requires not only an act of Congress, pun intended, but also a couple of platoons of Marines to go in and drag them out. Anyway, investigative reporter David Steinberg, who has extensively reported on the marriage fraud allegations against Omar previously, noted that Omar allegedly entering the couple's home while the wife was away in a damning indictment on her moral judgment. Quote, "I avoided at Ilhan Minnesota's affair. The only newsworthy element was the large payment. But Omar entered the wife's home while she was away. Wow, voters deserve to know that." Okay. Also quoting Steinberg was continuing, and this was all posted up on Twitter, by the way. Back to quoting, "That is an objectively disturbing claim about Ilhan's moral judgment. It has nothing to do with complicated adult relationships. Entering the home, even if invited by Manette, is troubling. Still think she can't be the multiple felon all the evidence shows her to be?" Question mark. Wink, wink. I don't know. I just don't know. How is Ilhan Omar still in office? In fact, how are any of the members of the Quad? The Quad. Wow, I really am blah, 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 tongue-tied tonight. Any of the members of the Squad, how are they still in office? Other than Ms. Presley, she's the only one who hasn't done something that is at least questionable and possibly criminal. She's the only one. And something tells me that the only reason that we don't know anything about that is we just still haven't dug as deeply into her past. We probably would find something. Yes, I know. That's me not being nice. Okay, you see my journalistic standards. I tried it early on. I'm over my limit now. So the Daily Mail reported last month that Omar had split from her second husband as controversy continued to mount over her marital history, saying, quote, "The bust up comes just as critics are demanding answers as to whether she married her own brother in a successful bid to get him into the United States." The Daily Mail also reported saying, quote, "Omar has now dumped her current husband, who she first married in a religious ceremony in 2002 and divorced in 2008, and moved into a penthouse apartment in one of Minneapolis's trendiest neighborhoods." According to the Daily Mail, they said they had learned that exclusively. And, of course, it was immediately made public because what a newspaper outlet or an online news outlet or, you know, anything claiming to be media related, what do? They learn secrets and then they share secrets. If they can find any. And if they can't find any good enough, they then make up secrets and share those. So I really don't know. It's not surprising, I guess, at this point. And, you know, it would be different. You know, if you're going to talk about, ooh, that's your private life, and ooh, what does that have to do with anything? Well, here's what it's got to do with. It has a lot to do with the fact that there was absolutely no reason and no excuses for that kind of behavior to take place. We're supposed to be holding these people to a higher standard. She wants to be in a questionable, complicated relationship. Okay, well, that part is her business. And I'm okay with that not necessarily being public knowledge. But I do think there is a certain point to the fact that if you're literally going into this woman's home when she's away, that does speak to character, and that does speak to whether or not you can trust her. So maybe the voters do have a right to know that since she stepped up and moved into the public domain. I mean, celebrities have to face scrutiny. They expect President Donald J. Trump to face that level of scrutiny. So why not? Hey, quick shout out to Vito. Just checking back in the chat room. See Vito. Mamma mia, no sharia, Vito. Don't see Vito in here very often. Been a while. Thanks for stopping by. So we're looking at this. The real question mark still comes about this money, though. It always comes back to the money. Does this guy love Omar because she was able to funnel him $230,000 in about a year's time? I mean, that might make me like her a little more. I still wouldn't like her, but I'd like her a little more. Hey, Omar. I I'll take a cashier's check if you don't mind, because I'm not about to let you wire me money. I'd have to give you my account numbers. I don't think I trust you, Ilhan. Oh, Ilhan. I know. Okay, for the purposes of the drinking game, Ilhan Omar, who is often cited as being part of the squad headed up by AOC. Okay, you may now take your shot. My obligatory required mention of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Ooh, now you're up to three shots. For those of you who don't know the rules or don't even know what I'm talking about, because, you know, some of you are new to the show. I was told a while back, we were discussing Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Yeah, those shots are adding up now. We were discussing her on a fairly regular basis there for a little bit. Yeah, I mean, you guys know she was on a tear. And in the process, some of the folks that were listening to me, they were college students, and they sent me a message and told me that they had set up a drinking game when they were listening to the podcast. So they would turn on the podcast when they were about to party, and it's one shot when I say AOC in reference to her, and it's two shots if I say her full name. So if I just say Alexandria, then it's still just one shot. If I say Ocasio-Cortez, then it's still just one shot. If it's AOC, it's one shot. Nobody's going to be able to be standing here in a few minutes. But if I say the full name, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, well, then that's two shots. So for those of you who would like to play along at home, please don't, unless you are absolutely positively not going anywhere else tonight. If you don't have anything else to do, then okay, join in the fun. But there still comes a point, depending on what shots you're taking, where this will still be a detriment to your health. Blood alcohol level can be a dangerous thing, boys and girls. All right. Anyway, how did we get here? How did we get here to the fact that we're now electing people? I know I ask the question a lot, and we know a lot of the answers. We go over it quite often, especially when certain guests are on. We talk a lot about it with when Chief is on, Chief hanging out in the chat room with us when he joins us on Sundays. When Ron Edwards is here, we talk a lot about that. And when Kel has been on here in the past, we've talked a lot about that as well. You know, and several other guests, we keep coming around, we keep circling around, but it is still a head scratcher to think that there are still so many people that love this country, but just aren't paying close enough attention to realize or understand that they're being bamboozled, that they're being hosed. They don't even understand that the whole concept of social justice is just a way of trying to shove a leash. Just shove that leash right up your bum, which is the hard way to put it on, by the way. But that is the attempt. That's what they're trying to garner control. They want to control you. They want to control me. They especially want to shut up people like me and Chief and Vito, who's hanging out with us too. Everybody who's associated with Global Patriot Radio, actually, they'd probably love to shut up every single one of those guys. They'd love to shut up Annie, who does a great show over at Southern Sense Talk Radio. Don Smith, they'd love to silence him. Yeah, it's just that simple. They want to shut us down because we say things. In fact, I was talking to Ron Edwards just a few minutes before coming on the show, and he was letting me know that he's back in the Zuckerberg gulag. He's got another 30-day stint in Facebook jail, which officially means now for the last 4 months he's been in Facebook jail more than he has not been. This time, though, there's been no real explanation. He doesn't even know what offense he's committed. No explanation. That, to me, seems odd, but again, not unexpected, because what happens when you have people that tell the truth and don't pull punches? Well, sometimes they see things that tend to melt down the snowflakes, you know, make those poor little softy tree huggers that need a cry closet just start weeping uncontrollably in public, which then also, of course, triggers them further because they didn't have time to get to the cry closet. I don't know, guys. It just, it's one of those occasions where you see this stuff and you just, you can't help but wonder, though, how did we get so disconnected? How did so many people get so far into the, I just want to go to work every day and then I just want to come home? Want to watch some television, want to consume some of the beverage of my choice, whether that be soft drink or an adult beverage or, you know, maybe even a kale and seaweed smoothie, whatever. I just want to go do that stuff and not be bothered. And I can understand that to a point. But then you can't pretend for 15 minutes out of your day that you're some kind of social justice warrior. You shouldn't be on social media just giving everybody else down the road for that short amount of time you're on there before you go back to your life of knowing nothing and think you've done something awesome. One of my recent articles criticizing Elon Musk, because I tend to think that Elon Musk is a bit of a flim-flam artist. So I've written 3, maybe 4 articles that have been picked up nationally in regards to basically questioning Elon Musk's motivations. I'll put it politely. But what I love is that the majority of people that have decided that they want to respond to the article, this most recent one is up at LifeZet, by the way, should anyone be interested, talking about how Elon Musk has decided to support Andrew Yang. And, of course, I basically explained why that's not a surprise. No surprise. But, people love to respond, and plenty of criticisms, but what I love is the fact that they demonstrate within their criticism that they really have no idea what's really going on beneath the surface. But that's what they accuse me of doing. And, you know, again, I'm clear. I'm up front. I'm coming at it with an angle. I have a bone to pick. And I back up myself. I have the research. I put links into the articles. Sometimes some of these folks, when they pick it up nationally, they don't always include the links. But I put them in. I've researched before I write. But most of what I'm writing is opinion. I tell you that up front. It's obvious. And then they accused me of using my unprofessional opinion instead of researched facts. It's like, nope, I used both. And I still don't hear you actually denying that any of what I've said is true. So that's the world we're living in. And I'm glancing at the clock. And you know what? I have already babbled for a majority of this first 30 minutes. So you know what time it is. Assuming that I can get the tech to operate smoothly here. And right now it's really not wanting to. So I'm going to keep hoping that it'll stop the little spinny circle of doom here and let me take control of my switchboard here again. And as soon as it does that, we will play the Edwards Notebook and then, of course, the Songs and Stories for Soldiers Veterans Tip of the Day. And, okay, now I'm hoping that you guys can just hear me at all because the whole bloody screen just disappeared. It's been one of those days. Anyway, I don't know. Got to get it up here. There we go. Now I think I can do something. Oh, now my spinny circle of doom is back to spinning. This is fantastic. At any rate, I was feeling under the weather yesterday, and, you know, I've had kind of a long stint. I had a stretch there where I was feeling a little rough for a while, and then I'd felt quite a bit better for a while. I thought I was over that hump, and I was feeling pretty good about it. And now I'm back to feeling kind of rough again, and I'm starting to think that given the way this has played out, I'm starting to think that for some time now, I've been struggling with something that I just probably picked up many years ago when I actually worked at a hospital. And I say that because before I did that, I never got sick. Never. Did not happen. Since then, though, it's been fairly consistent. Anyway, I finally have control back here, so I'm going to stop yammering and stalling, and let's play the Edwards Notebook, shall we? Thanks for putting up and stay with me. I'll be right back, presumably, again, if the tech holds out, with today's guest. At least I'm having fun. Stay with me, guys. I'll be right back.
After 60 years of systematic indoctrination, many Americans are failing in life, not because of a lack of opportunities, but rather a negative attitude. Hello, I'm Ron Edwards. On today's page from the Edwards Notebook, perhaps the inspirational words of Minister Chuck Swindoll will encourage a more virtuous approach to life's many setbacks. The longer I live, the more I realize the impact of attitude on life. Attitude to me is more important than the facts. It is more important than the past, than education, than money, than circumstances, than failures, than success, than what other people think, say, or do. It is more important than appearance, giftedness, or skill. It will make or break a company, a church, or a home. The remarkable thing is that we have a choice every day regarding the attitude we will embrace for that day. We cannot change the inevitable. The only thing we can do is play a very important string we all have, and that is our attitude. I am convinced that life is 10% what happens to me and 90% how I react to it. And so it is with you. We are in charge of our attitudes. I'm Ron Edwards. Please check out my brand new website, theronedwards.talkspot.com, and let's meet again on another page from the Edwards Notebook.
Ron Edwards, the new voice of America.
This is Dan Perkins with your songs and stories for soldiers, veterans tip of the day. Did you know that the Vet Center celebrated their 40th anniversary in June? Robert Wilkie, head of the VA, said of the Vet Centers, "The Vet Centers have a long-standing legacy of building trust, fostering community, and providing confidential counseling, outreach, and referral services. Over this 40 years, 300,000 veterans from Vietnam and other wars have taken advantage of this great program. Many Vet Centers are participating with songs and stories for soldiers. So here's your veterans tip of the day. It's not too late to ask for help, and there are over 300 centers across the United States with 80 mobile units. Go to va.gov and look for your nearest Vet Center. I've been to some of these, and they're safe places to go. Remember, people do want to help you. This has been Dan Perkins with your Veterans Tip of the Day.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for staying with us through that very brief break. And it is now my honor and pleasure to welcome to the show first-time guest, Mr. Veda Sitaram. He's, of course, a Canadian who is a filmmaker, and he's currently working on a documentary called Man Down, A Closer Look at Family Court. And he's doing a lot of background work right now, and he is asking for some help also. So please follow the link in today's show description if you feel compelled to help out. He's got a Kickstart program going, crowdfunding, to try and help make this documentary a full-blown reality. He's been working diligently at it. And so, Mr. Sitaram, thank you so much for joining us this evening. And how are you today?
Thanks for having me. I'm fine, thank you, Tim.
All right. Well, let's get just jump right in into the meat and potatoes here. Obviously, for some time now, if you have had the misfortune of being caught up in family court, you've been put through a ringer if you happen to be a man, and in particularly if you happen to have been a father. A lot of people have kind of been inconsistent on it. And, of course, in some courts, it's better than in others. Some judges are a little more sympathetic, but in most places around the country, you hear similar stories. So what you've done is you've decided you want to step up and document this so that the people that don't realize what's going on, or maybe don't understand to what extent this is going on, can have that eye-opening experience. Can you tell me, sir, what was it exactly that made you decide that this was a documentary that you wanted to put together, a truth that you wanted to tell?
Well, it started when, first and foremost, this is an investigative film. So we're investigating a possible bias against Men and Family Court. But I would say I put what really jolted me was a few years ago, I was doing, I have a background in fiction and screenwriting, but I wanted to go in a different direction and do documentary filmmaking. So then when I took a few courses and I took a particular, documentary filmmaking course about 4 or 5 years ago. And for my grad film, I had to be obviously pick a topic. So I was thinking about, okay, just family court. But somehow I stumbled upon a men's rights website. I'd never heard of them before. And I thought, well, what do they want? I don't get it. But then when I read their grievances, their biggest grievance for me was how men are treated in family court. A lot of men will work their entire lives or work many years, and they build up a certain amount of wealth, or they would build up, obviously, a certain amount of attachment to their kids. And then one day there's a divorce, and now they lose the house, lose the car, and now they see their kids. They go from seeing their kids, 7 days a week to 6 to 8 days a month. And I said, okay, right then and there, instantly, I thought, well, this is a great topic, because when I was growing up as a kid, let's say my teens, I heard stories of, let's say, older cousins, other adults going through a tough divorce. I didn't know what that meant exactly. I thought that just meant, well, they're going through, the pain of a breakup. But when I got older and some friends of mine have been through divorces themselves, then I realized what a really meaty topic this is. And I got the impression that a lot of men in particular, they claim that, listen, that I'm not a dad in a divorce. I've next to no rights. I'm relegated to like an uncle. One thing that could help me going through this divorce is if my soon-to-be ex-wife, if she wants me to be an integral part of my kids' lives. If she doesn't want me to be a big part of my kids' lives, that could easily be granted. You can be reduced to 6 to 8 days a month. So when I heard that kind of firsthand explanation, I said, it's a great topic, because it goes so counter to what our culture today talks about, things like male privilege and things like that. When people are thinking, well, okay, men have it so easy, they don't want to consider the possibility. Maybe there's at least one place where men, where you don't want to be a man, and that could be in family court.
Great. Well, it is one of those topics, too, where I think a lot of people, unless you're actually actively involved in a situation like this, it doesn't normally register on your daily radar. And it does come down to the fact that, unfortunately, there are a lot of the what are often referred to as deadbeat dads. These are some folks that have given all men across the board kind of a bad name. And it would seem that the courts kind of got biased against most men at that point. And it seems like on a state-by-state basis, of course, laws varying a little bit. And then, of course, in Canada, province by province, I would imagine it's the same, that there are just enough variances that everybody wants to try and they want to protect the relationship between children and mothers and put the burden on the men. And I think it kind of became a slippery slope, where it kind of started out like, okay, we're going to protect this, to eventually snowballing the fact that now the good family men who want those strong relationships don't really have much of a chance. So far, you've been putting together footage. I was looking at the website a little earlier and the YouTube channel, and you've got some great interviews and some great footage already. But so far, what would you say is the biggest impact that you've seen on an individual?
I would say the biggest impact would be thoughts or attempts at suicide. It's a statistic out of the UK that divorced men are 8 times more likely to kill themselves than divorced women. In many different countries, it is a serious problem, but I would say it's quite possibly the biggest impact. And I would say, from a just as a personal story, something I went through when I spoke to, I placed an ad, I think it was maybe in Craigslist or something, can't remember now, but one guy contacted me and he said, listen, I think I like what you're doing. I'm wondering if we could sit down and chat. And we met in a Starbucks. And when he told me his story, he basically said that, yes, he had to pay child support and everything, but when he was in between jobs and he couldn't pay because he didn't have a job, it didn't make much of a difference. They would, you know, they would take money out of his bank account. And eventually when he really couldn't pay, he could barely make rent or whatever it was, he was thrown in jail several times. And he eventually moves on to tell me that he left. He left his family, couldn't take it anymore. So I asked him, I said, well, listen, you know, a lot of people are going to say, why should they have any sympathy for you? I mean, I understand you went through the pain of family court and you said your kids are being alienated against you and everything, but you left your family. Why would they have any sympathy with you? And then he said flat out, he said, well, you're right. I did abandon my family, but it was better than suicide. And he just said one day he couldn't take it anymore after he was, you know, he could barely make rent, maybe living on hot dogs, that kind of thing. He just piled everything in his car and he just drove, and that was it. And it's possibly the most powerful thing that happened to me, not just the fact that this obviously could drive anyone to suicide, but it got me thinking. You know, I wonder how many times in my life before, when I heard someone, a man, quote-unquote, just left, I wonder maybe if it wasn't as black and white as he just left. Because the story that this man told me, it wasn't like, you know, a divorce was filed on, whatever, February 1st, and by February 15th, he left. It wasn't a case of that. It was a slow, long descent before he said that, that's it. I'm gone. And I'm thinking, well, maybe when a lot of men leave, they don't quote unquote just leave. It sounds to me like he was tortured to a point that no parent should be. And this system can often incentivize a fight. And you have to remember what hangs in the balance here. It's money. You know, lawyers get fat of the system. It is big business. I mean, law can be a very noble profession, but of course, at the same time, there's a lot of money in the balance here. So it's one thing that people don't talk about, what's at stake. And like I said, big business.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned the noble profession, because you're absolutely right. It certainly can be. And there's a lot of people that get into law with very noble intentions. But we've discussed several times on this show the difference between personal ethics and professional ethics. And within the judicial system, particularly in family court, the highest level of professional ethics is doing whatever is necessary to win, which doesn't necessarily right. sound particularly ethical to me. How many occasions have you already documented, because I know you have on at least one that you've got footage up, where an attorney has advised the woman to lie? I mean, to go get an order of protection when it wasn't necessary. I mean, it happens quite frequently, right?
Well, the men I've spoken to, they have said, you know, when they were having talks, where they were going through a divorce, they, you know, no one had filed yet. One man actually told me, you know what, my wife told me, she said, you know what, I would be so mad at me too. If I were you, I would hit me. He said, what? And he said, why is she encouraging me to hit her? And it is, more than one man has told me that sometimes their lawyers, not in the state, this is in Canada, will mm-hmm. say, you know what, if you get him to hit you or something, things are a lot more will work in your favor. And a lot of people don't know that it's just a claim of domestic violence. And this is the lawyer in the States, in California, who I spoke to. He said flat out that to get a restraining order, just the claim is enough. And the second there's a restraining order, the whole situation goes in a different direction. To get a restraining order, the standard of proof is the preponderance of evidence, which is the lowest level. Basically, it's, you know, I'm afraid of him, and this is why. And it could be fairly vague, but it's enough to get an immediate restraining order. And as I asked him, but they wouldn't issue a restraining order against anyone unless there was some kind of thorough investigation, right? I said, no, it can be done just based on the claim. And I thought that for a lawyer to say that, I thought that was shocking. And another cop in San Diego confirmed it as well.
Right. I mean, and from the court standard, I mean, when you come in front of a judge and you're sitting here and telling this judge your story, if you can't get a good vibe on what's going on or what's not, the expectation actually by the public would be, if you're going to make a mistake on the side that protects the people who may be in danger. So it's not even fair necessarily to be angry at the judge in a situation like that. But the fact that lawyers often will encourage these scenarios to kind of hype up and pour it on, that just – It does put men already kind of behind the eight ball, for if you'll forgive the adage.
Yeah, well, it's so tricky because this is what hanging in the balance. No judge wants to be the type of judge who will say, well, okay, I don't know for sure this claim of domestic violence is true, so I'm going to keep the father with the kids until the investigation is done. And next thing you know, this ends up really being an abusive man, and someone gets hurt, whether it's the kids or whoever it is. And no judge wants to be that type of person. So it's always the quote-unquote safest thing to do to separate, bring, is to take the man out of the situation. But that is the assumption that is hanging in the air as one of the so-called godfathers of the men's rights movement. I said, Dr. Warren Farrell, he said, a man's greatest weakness is his facade of strength, and a woman's greatest strength is her facade of weakness. You know, if you're a woman and you accuse a man of domestic violence, so in family court, they are quite likely to believe you. And if it's the other way, but of course, if it's the other way around, and you're a man and you accuse your ex-wife of domestic violence, it's a harder sell, and that because that exists out of the intention, of course, is to be cautious, so we don't want to risk anything. So very likely the man is going to be separated from his kids. But the problem, of course, is when months go by and there is an investigation, you know, a restraining order might be issued. But they said, okay, we're going to investigate and see what happens. So 3 months, 4 months, 5 months go by, and it can come back. Okay, we haven't found any evidence that there was any kind of intimate partner violence, but are we going to go back to where it was before? Are we going to start at a point where there's 50-50 shared parenting and shared custody? No. Chances are the judge is going to say, well, you know, the kids are used to this right now. They're used to seeing the dad 60 days a week, and they're used to this new routine. So we're going to keep things as is. And that is likely to continue on.
All right. Well, how far along into the documentary are you? At what level of completion would you say you're at? And I was just going to say, and what are some of the other things you'd still like to do as far as going about and getting more documentation for your documentary?
Sure. Well, we shot about, I would say, 36, 37 hours of footage so far. And people might think, well, okay, if you want to make it to a two-hour movie, 37 hours footage, it has a lot. But actually, when it comes to raw footage in the editing room, it's almost like a rule of thumb. An hour of raw footage edited can end up being like a minute of screen time. So for me to get, usually for a two-hour movie, you're getting close to at least 110, 120 hours of footage all edited down. But so, and that's so that's what we have so far, about 37 hours of footage, which I estimate is about 20% of the footage we need. But of course, for us to finish the film, we're having this this Kickstarter campaign. Someone goes on to Kickstarter.com, you just type in the, you just search for Man Down, it should pop up, and we're trying to raise the money to finish the film. And the, I would say the additional footage we need would be all the scores of men, many of whom have already, the scores of men who have contacted me, and I would say at least 60-70% they are willing to go on camera and be interviewed and tell their stories. And it is, there's so much depth to it, in particular the perception of us as a society, the perception we have of men. I'm of the opinion that there are a lot of people out there, a lot of men out there, they might want to take maybe a degree of personal responsibility for this the family situation being what it is. Because I, something I truly believe is, if the shoe were on the other foot and the outcome of family court was such that it would be women and mothers who usually lose custody at the rates that, that men and fathers do, if that were the case, women would not be silent about it. They'd be taking the streets and marching against it. I firmly believe that. But I think it's the men, because many men are taught to believe, well, come on, you should suck it up, be more manly, you know, you should just move on with your life. Men tend not to complain very much. But I think there are more and more men now who think, well, I think we have to fight back now, if not for my own possibilities, the hopes I have of maybe finding a good wife or a good mate, but maybe also for my kids, my sons. You know, you don't want people saying, well, marriage, no, it's just not worth it, and you're gonna opt out. One of the best, one of the greatest joys we all get from life is from family. And for that to be one less of an option for anyone, men or women, it is no plus. So to document that humanity or potential loss of humanity is definitely something I'm determined to show.
Yeah. Now that you mentioned that, I actually meant to ask you a little bit earlier. There's this movement, I guess, for lack of a better word, men going their own way. It's an obvious phenomenon that seems to still be growing yet, and that too, you're contending that this is maybe a factor to that.
Absolutely. Again, never heard of them before. Who's MGTOW? Yep, men going their own way. Usually they're online, and of course some of them are men who say, well, okay, I was married once before, never happening again. Because I lost everything, I don't see my kids anymore, this and that. If it has happened to a man a few times, well, once, so maybe at least once might be enough. But the fact is, I do believe there are many people who belong to MGTOW and they're young men. And to me, that is really unfortunate. You know, if you're a young man, you have your whole life ahead of you. You might serve your future best by maybe fighting back or being more vocal than as opposed to just saying, okay, I'm just not going to participate at all and go MGTOW, as it said. But I guess we'll see in the upcoming years how effective it'll be.
Yeah. Well, it is a scary thought, because I do I see these numbers. Birth rate populations are going down in lots of
yep.
countries, particularly Western civilization nations. And while a certain level of that may not necessarily be a bad thing, the numbers we're talking about are significant. It really is a case where between the social justice warrior mentality of cutting back on the number of people to save the planet to just flat out fear of what happens if you get involved with the wrong person, whether it's because of the hashtag MeToo stuff or whether, again, it's what happens if I get involved and then have the family and then all of a sudden here we are in family court. It's all kind of this perfect storm that's scaring a lot of young men away from traditional families, which, like you said, is typically for most of us one of the greatest joys we have in our lives.
Absolutely. And I don't think there's any two ways about that. And it's a constant across different countries, across different cultures. But if I would give anyone any advice, if you don't like where things are going, you don't like how things are, the best thing to do is to talk and speak up. I mean, it's sometimes I'm sure it's not easy. If you were to speak up and you espouse some of these ideas at work, you're going to get, you know, hard glares. I mean, I remember I made a comment on a Facebook page maybe a couple of years ago, and I said, you know, I'm doing a documentary about men who think there's a bias against them in family court, and you know, if you know anyone who has been through it, please contact me. One woman instantly said, oh, women are left to raise kids all by themselves, and you're worrying about the men, stupid man. And I'm going, where did that come from? I mean, I didn't say women don't go through a tough time in family court. I'm saying I'm doing a documentary about how men feel when they go through a tough time in family court. But it's just to draw attention to the possibility that men have problems, even that this is even a thing. Some people think that if you're in favor of bringing problems that men have, you're trying to bring it to the fore. Some people think, well, why are you wasting your time? It's a crazy world. So I encourage people to talk more, to speak up. I think remaining silent is a mistake.
I couldn't have said that better myself. I want to thank you again for coming on with us tonight, and I certainly appreciate all the time you spent with us. Please, before you go, one more time, share the website for both the Kickstarter and for the project. And if you're inviting people to follow you on social media, please feel free to share that as well.
Sure. Just go to Kickstarter.com and search for Man Down. Or you can go on Facebook and, again, search for Man Down, A Closer Look, A Family Court, and there we are on Facebook. And please make a plan.
All right. All right. Thank you so much. And hopefully we can get together again sometime soon and talk about the progress, and hopefully we'll have good news, maybe even a finished product before too much longer. I think that would be great. Thank you so much again, and I look forward to an opportunity to speak with you again.
Thank you so much for having me, Tim.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, there you have it. Vinny Sutiam. I'm probably butchering the name. Okay, so I only got a few minutes left, but I can tell you from my own personal experience, family court is no friend to the men when you are there, and many places have laws in place where there are flat-out minimums, whether you can afford it or not. And again, I don't want to make excuses, because I understand a lot of this is based on the fact that there are a lot of people out there that are just flat out deadbeats, period. That's where they are. That's who they are. And they, as with almost everything else in life, it only takes a few bad apples to ruin everything for everyone else. But justice is still supposed to be what courts are designed to attempt to dole out. We don't see as much of that as we might like, but that's what they're there for. And sadly, the laws have been written, especially in family court, where there is essentially cookie-cutter justice. We see that in other places, too, within the criminal justice system. But if you're not taking the time to look at it, you really can't expect to get to the heart of the matter, especially when so many hearts are involved, which is the whole purpose of family court. These courts are bogged down ridiculously to an extent that I'm not even really criticizing the courts, but there's got to be a better way. So once again, I would like to ask everybody to check out the Kickstarter site for Mr. Sutiam. Go look up Man Down, A Closer Look at the Family Court. And before I let you guys go, another quick shout out to Vito hanging out with us in the chat room tonight. Thanks for being here, Vito. Mamma mia, no sharia. Chief hanging out. He's the host of Simple Facts of Life. You can check that out right here at blogtalkradio.com and search for Simple Facts of Life. He's on Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern. That's live, but you can check out the show in archives. And we've got Eddie, the radio chick, Ubella, hanging out with us as well. Hey, Eddie, glad to have you here. She's, of course, the host of she's the host of Southern Sense Talk Radio. Yeah, that's it. So many S's shows going on. Southern Sense Talk Radio, best thing you can do to find her is go to her website, southern-sense.com, and from there you can decide which way you want to listen. In the meanwhile, also, Vorpalbyte was with us. Thanks, Vorp, for having been here. Jumped out early. Thank you so much, everybody. And remember, don't take my word for it. Definitely, definitely don't take their word for it. Be prepared to put in some effort, and more importantly, to use your brain if you really want to tap into the truth. See you tomorrow night, guys.
Using both hands. Founders knew the Second Amendment was the final one to keep, to hold our other rights intact so we'd never become sheep. Stalin, Hitler, Mao Amin, and Pol Pot, they told us things that you never forgot. Is using both hands. Well, I prefer the 308 to the tiny 223. It gives me more than 1,000 yards to protect my family.
Using both hands.